Good morning. Welcome into another edition of Big Talk, college sports with Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler alongside my partner, Sam Sprunger. Sam, how we doing?
It's Friday and I just told you I'm going to see Animaniacs live tonight. So it's a wonderful night.
Well,
Well,
and much like you, I this last week with the weather going up a little bit, I'm wearing a golf outfit here. I might be able to sneak out and play a few more holes today, which in February, March, it's insane that we're having this conversation in the Midwest.
Let's look at it this way. It's so Midwest, though. This tells you how Midwest we are, everybody, if you're watching. We had a day, and I literally, the last basketball game of the season here for the high school here, we played Tuesday, right? It was warm enough, I wore shorts. The next day, it was 30. It's not me just being stubborn and wearing shorts when it's 30. It was warm enough to wear shorts.
It was pushing on 70 on
Tuesday.
Yes,
it was. Yes,
and then
was.
There was a tornado in the Midwest, a hailstorm, all that next night. It was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You had something nice. We got to balance this out.
You know what? You had the nice day, take it, that's fine, but you're gonna pay a price. It's just what's gonna happen.
That's living in the Midwest, bona fide. But so for the show, we got a lot to get into. Big Ten men's basketball's just got a week left of the regular season after this weekend. Big Ten women's basketball, this is the finish line for the regular season. It right. ends this weekend, and we get into postseason play. There's a lot there, and a couple of the key members of both Big Ten men's basketball and women's basketball with some pretty big decisions that have been made here recently too. So we got a lot to get into, but I want to start because we talked about this not too long ago, Sam. The conversation may be the only place where drama resides with Big Ten men's basketball this year, because I mean, the Big Ten's pretty much wrapped up for the regular season. It's going to be Purdue as your champions.
Probably by themselves too.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the standings right now, they're 14-3 in Big Ten play. Illinois is the closest at 12-5. I mean, if Purdue beats Michigan State this Saturday and Illinois loses at Wisconsin, which both of those things are doable.
Both feasible.
If that happens, then, I mean, Purdue pretty much has got it clinched up.
Well, if Purdue wins one more, it secures a tie. Or if Illinois loses one, it secures the tie. If they both happen, Purdue clinches.
Yep. No, you're right. And that's what I was looking at just to make sure we had the math right. And yeah, no, it's almost a done deal with over a week to go. So maybe the only place drama resides is for Coach of the Year. And yeah. I think you can have an actual conversation there. And coming off of last night, look, I mean, I'm kind of saying this cheek and tongue and having fun. Because I don't think you can actually vote for the man, but Jake Diebler, I mean, he's 3-1 since taking over Ohio State
with a win over number 2 team in the country.
Upset Purdue. They went to the Breslin Center, which even though Michigan State's not having its normal Michigan State year, it's still a daunting task, especially for an interim coach. Jake Diebler's 3-1 after taking over Ohio State. Like, obviously I don't think you can vote for him as coach of the year. It's only been 2 weeks out of a like 20-week season or whatever it is that it feels like. But nonetheless.
But did he do more with what was expected?
Yeah. Before interim basis expectations, he exceeded those. So, but how crazy is this?
Well, and that's the kicker is this team hasn't changed other than the head coach. Mm-hmm. So it makes you wonder, you know, what was it? Or is it the fire that just, you know, that sudden change that lit the adrenaline and they're eventually going to come back down?
I was going to say, you know, those can be rallying points, emotional points.
Oh, sure.
Either a good way or bad way. And
it's why a coach gets a technical foul once in a while on purpose in a game. It gets the team fired up and rallies them behind. So it kind of maybe is what I'm probably guessing.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too.
But they are 17-12 now, Dalton. They're 17-12. They're above Maryland. Like if they win the final two games of the Big Ten, they'll be 9-11 in the Big Ten. That's not horrible.
Yeah, like Ohio State, if they pick up a couple more wins, like the NCAA tournament, unless they win the Big Ten tournament's out of reach. But they're going to make the NIT. And based on what we saw earlier this year, that even seems like a reach. Like, that's incredible.
At one point, they were tied with Michigan for last.
By the way, Michigan last night drops to Rutgers 82-52 in a year where it just it's hard to describe what's happening with that program in Ann Arbor.
And without getting too deep into it, do you see that the coaching staff comes back after this year? I mean, really, honestly, is there – I mean, we're both not fans of Michigan, but taking off the bias hat, is there a way, for as much as you take your hat off, that's funny.
Literally.
is there anything that saves them, that coaching staff?
I think their biggest savior, if you're asking that question, is the football program success. And maybe they're
riding the high a little bit.
There's a high, there's good vibes, there's celebration with the football program that maybe it just camouflages and kind of hides what's happened this basketball season. But I mean, to your point, it's 3-15 in Big Ten play, 8-21 for the season. Things don't seem to be on the up. Like, it seems to be following this trend for the future.
We didn't have huge expectations from Michigan. I mean, they lost Jet Howard to the NBA draft. They lost Hunter Dickinson to the transfer to Kansas. So we didn't have huge expectations of Michigan anyway.
Yeah.
But we certainly didn't expect 3-15, did we? I mean, this is atrocious.
Yeah, it is. And again, a loss by 30 to Rutgers, a team that struggled scoring the ball on offense all year. It's flabbergasting.
And that's the kicker, is they got beat handily by Rutgers. It wasn't like, ooh, you know, they fought hard and only dropped a game by a couple of points. They got housed.
Mm-hmm. So we talk about maybe the drama with Coach of the Year. If I bring it back.
Thank you.
We talk about the Jake Diebler bit. If we're having this serious conversation with a week to go, who would you like, Sam?
Can we bring Chris Collins? I know it's hard for a repeat, but can we bring him into it? Because right now, Northwestern is sitting in third, or tied for third, I think, right behind Wisconsin, if not tied. Like, they haven't suffered, even though Ty Berry is not with the team anymore because of injury, they're still winning ball games.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that has a lot to do with Boo Booey, but at the same time, that's a good coaching job to take a hit like they did with Ty Berry and still be able to keep it going.
Northwestern is right now third in the Big Ten Conference. They're 11-6 in Big Ten play. They have yet to lose a Big Ten game in Evanston. They're 8-0. Yeah. They're in Evanston. They're one of three. There's still three teams that are undefeated at home this late in the season in Big Ten play, which is kind of remarkable. Purdue, Northwestern, Nebraska, you just don't win at their places. But for Northwestern to do this, I'm with you. I'll absolutely hear that conversation.
And I'm not even saying that it's convincing that absolutely, yes, he is. But I would think that this is at least a conversation to have because of being able to keep going on that same winning trend, even though they took a big loss. And do I think that their projection for the tournament is going to be different? Markedly, I think it will be, because you don't have Ty Berry. You don't have that Robin to your Batman. But right now, at least in the Big Ten Conference, he's doing, you know, the cast and coach are doing their job very well.
No, they most certainly are. And so I think Chris Collins has to be in the conversation. We talked about
Fred Hoiberg.
Fred Hoiberg, I think, is where I land.
Yeah, I
feel
so
like Ben Johnson being in the conversation, but Fred Hoiberg got Nebraska to 10-8 in the Big Ten. They're 20-9 overall for the season. I didn't know that this team would be able to accomplish that. I didn't know that they'd be able to be undefeated in Lincoln, and kind of the same domain though of Northwestern. I didn't know that they'd be able to be 11-6 and especially win these games without Ty Berry. Mm-hmm. Much I could say the same with Nebraska. And maybe some of it is just the feel good around the Huskers and Hoiberg finally getting it done. But it does feel like outside of K-State, Tominaga, like, and even with Tominaga, Fred Hoiberg's getting the absolute best out of his players. And in conversation with some of the future former coaches, and we asked, like, how should we be evaluating Big Ten Coach of the Year? Like, what should we actually be looking at? And the answer was, who's getting the most out of their players? Fred Hoiberg, you can make the argument, is fulfilling that formula.
I don't argue that at all, but here's my wrench. Since nobody is absolutely running away with it, let's say Purdue beats Michigan State and they beat Illinois and they end up 17-3 in the Big Ten. Is that enough for Matt Painter to get stronger consideration for it?
So what I would say, and I'll break this down from my own prism. How's this? Okay.
No, that's fine.
Which I, whatever this means. but I find it funny because we'll talk about Big Ten women's basketball a little bit later too. But like on the women's side, a lot of times it's whoever kind of wins the league, which some coaches would tell you that's kind of maybe how we should be doing it. But if we do, from my prism, and all the goofy formulas we put around this in terms of who beats preseason expectations, so on and so forth, look, Purdue has the most talent, and it's not even close in this league. Now, Purdue should have a couple of Big Ten honors, like, selected. Zach Edey should be player of the year. Braden Smith should be high on some of these postseason lists. Like, Purdue should be filling out some of the player stuff. And I think that's where we decide to give credit to, like, in this pie chart that we do in our own heads, we give more credit to the talent that's there on the team. Now, of course, that means Matt Painter also brought in this talent, and he should deserve some of the credit. But I feel like that's just not the equation we use when we do Coach of the Year. Is there something to winning the Big Ten that means you did a good job as coach? Absolutely. Will Matt Painter probably be dinged for losing three times with this unbelievable squad in the Big Ten Conference, even though their opponents played their absolute best games to get those three wins? Yeah, probably. Like, that just seems to be how we do this.
Well, and the one thing, aside from the Ohio State loss, and I will take that as they were on a very big high, you know, that high emotion from the change from Holtmann to Diebler. The other two places they lost, nobody else has won at either.
Yep.
So therefore, Purdue is not necessarily failing in those three games. They're just they fell victim to that environment. Okay. Yes. So that's why I was thinking maybe the rest of the 17, there's bound to be a slip up in there. And if they go 17-3, then kind of he's doing exceeding what maybe – because fair or not, we expected Michigan State to be better, and it was going to be a dogfight between Purdue and Michigan State. That's not the case. And Purdue's exceeding. That was my question.
Well, and I hear your question, but what I would say too, because you're right, like Michigan State we thought was going to be fighting right there with Purdue. Michigan State fell way behind the preseason expectation that was put in front of them. And like Illinois sitting there second in the Big Ten, Illinois 12-5 in the Big Ten play. Illinois is a good team, but if we're talking talent, like there is a dramatic difference.
Yeah.
And like, I just don't think anybody else is even of the same caliber this year of what Purdue's put out there. And that's going to hurt Matt Painter in terms of that. And Matt Painter, I doubt, cares at all. I'm pretty sure when he holds up the Big Ten trophy, he's going to be like, you know what? I feel pretty dang good. I really don't care the formulas and the goofy way we decided.
Or if they actually get to the Final Four, he's not going to care whether or not he was the Big Ten Coach of the Year.
That's the real one that they need because, I mean, they've won some of these Big Ten titles here in the last 6 years, 7 years. They've got to make something happen in the NCAA tournament for Purdue to finally feel –
That's fair. Since Collins, you know, we talked to Mike DeCourcy and he said it's very tough to win back-to-back years, so that is a mark against, you know, Collins maybe for some writers and some voters,
which and again, and this isn't even like, I don't think DeCourcy's speaking from his personal preference, but what a goofy idea that somebody can't be the best coach in the Big Ten twice. Like,
well, why is it not possible for a coach, but Zach Edey's going to be a two-time player correct. Of the year. You know, that, like that's I why said, it doesn't that, make
that's
sense.
That's not DeCourcy speaking for DeCourcy. That's DeCourcy saying how the collective that, writers
yeah, vote. This is how it is. You know, yeah. You know, he said he would consider it, but it would be difficult. I'm guessing he's not the only one doing that. Correct. So that's against Collins. Hoiberg, they still have only won one road game in the Big Ten. So that to me is a knock against him, which is why I thought maybe Painter doing what Purdue does might be able to sneak into it. But you've got a valid point. I'm not arguing that. I just it was a legit question of is this. I hate to say, you know, the nobody doing, you know, more than what they're already doing, you know, does that allow for Matt Painter to do it?
And it's not a stupid question. I just would say the vibe.
Oh, you went mute. Are you getting a phone call, Dalton?
An incoming call. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep. I can hear you now.
the vibes that I get, with Purdue and the way that the voting would go here is if Purdue was 19-1, if they made it through the Big Ten season and only dropped one, it's maybe a thing. But the three losses in the goofy way that people frame the arguments in their mind, they're just not going to give Matt Painter enough credit because he won the league with an all-star squad and they dropped several times. And it's just that the rest of the Big Ten wasn't good enough to make them pay for it. Like, that's kind of the logic that goes into it, I think. But
like I said, if they're cutting nets down in Detroit, I don't care.
I was going to say, and I'm pretty sure Matt Painter and them won't care at all.
Correct.
If this Saturday they clinch a share of the Big Ten title, they're just not going to care. And as we mentioned, that's an 8 o'clock tip tomorrow. There's no Big Ten men's basketball games today, but Michigan State's at Purdue at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Number 13, Illinois, will travel to Wisconsin at 1 o'clock. Penn State goes to Minnesota at 3:15. Excuse me. Iowa goes to Northwestern at 5:30. As we mentioned, if Illinois drops at Wisconsin, which is possible because Wisconsin has struggled a bit here in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they've struggled on the road. Wisconsin at home still seems to be a bit of a dangerous outfit, which is always funny in evaluations that the home road splits becomes a real thing. But with Wisconsin, it seems to be.
Well, and, you know, with Nebraska, too. but yeah, you think about this. Michigan has three wins in the Big Ten. One of them is against Wisconsin. It was at the Chrysler Arena, but it was on the road. But you're right. It's almost like last year's Maryland team where they couldn't win on the road, but they were unbeatable at home. Yep. Wisconsin has dropped a couple at home, but they're still really darn good at home. They've got that crowd behind them, and they do really well.
In the Big Ten, they're 7-1 at home, 3-6 on the road.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of amazing. And, of course, they dropped at Indiana with the fire alarm being pulled in Bloomington earlier this week and what was an interesting affair. But before we move on to a couple of other spots, I know you had some bracketology ready. As we're getting closer and closer, if we can get a look at that, we've talked about some of the Big Ten teams here. And, again, with not a lot of drama coming down the stretch for the regular season champion, it kind of allows us to look at some of these other things and maybe how these teams will fare in March Madness. Purdue's a one seed according to Stadium. All this bracketology is courtesy of Stadium here. But Purdue would be a one seed. Northwestern in that same region would be a 9 seed.
How about that for a second round matchup? You know, Purdue and Northwestern, you know, one of Purdue's three losses is against the team they're playing in the second round potentially.
Yeah.
If that were to happen.
That would be crazy. If they can find a way to play that in Welsh Ryan Arena.
I'm sure Northwestern's all about it.
But so Purdue won.
They might pull a fire alarm.
You're right. If we move over to the South region, which is the third one from the left, if you're following us on the visual medium, in that South region, Nebraska is slated as a 9 seed, Wisconsin a 5 seed. So the Badgers, who at one point were regarded as about a 3 seed.
That's what I wanted. Jeez, sorry.
Wisconsin, as Sam zooms in, Wisconsin being a 5 now. Honestly, given the fact of what we talked about with Wisconsin and how they've struggled here recently, they're now 18-10 overall. The five seed almost feels generous.
I was going to say that is with seven losses in the Big Ten, I'm really surprised it's still a five seed. Now, this isn't Mike DeCourcy. I don't know how these guys, go about, but doing their seeding and stuff, but they've been relatively close to what Mike DeCourcy has been. They haven't been exact, but relatively close. So I would think, yeah, I agree. That's a very generous, if they are indeed turn into a five seed, but come Selection Sunday.
And then if we move to the far region, Michigan State right now sitting as an eight seed, according to Stadium, Illinois a five. And again, I feel like with Michigan State's case, that's a bit generous after the losses to Iowa and Ohio State.
I think that's extremely generous, and I'm not 100% sure how recent. I know maybe it's this week's. I know it's this week's, but maybe they didn't have a chance to run everything through. So maybe it changes next week. But to me, an eight seed would be extremely generous.
Yep.
But if you look at these seedings, if this holds true, look at everyone is above the 5-12 line, or other than Purdue,
yeah,
or below the 5-12. What? No, this is much like last year where you had Purdue really high and the rest of the Big Ten just kind of plodding along at the the 8 through 5 through 10 range.
Yep. And this is what becomes worrisome, and I don't know how many people feel some high hopes about March Madness and what the Big Ten will do, because I mean there's been the stereotypes in recent years that the Big Ten gets in, sure, but they don't really win anything.
Right.
With the seeding this poor this year, and it's not wrong, like it's just what the Big Ten has been this season. It certainly makes you a little bit concerned about what the postseason will look like with the Big Ten. It could be some early outs again.
Well, you kind of look, and if Illinois maybe kicks it up a little bit, those two five seeds that they've got right there, those two are trending in the opposite directions.
And Illinois's got real potential. Illinois scores the ball so well. They're so talented. Mm-hmm. They just struggle defensively. If they can find it on that end of the floor, Illinois can make a run here.
I think they could make a Final Four if they got the right bracket and get playing well. They could make the Final Four conceivably.
Completely agree. I don't believe there's really any Big Ten teams kind of flirting with the bubble. Iowa's climbing their way back in. But Iowa still, I think, is a distance behind that bubble. They're now 17-12 on the season. They picked up a win over Penn State earlier this week, where Peyton Sanford got the first triple-double in Iowa basketball history, on the men's side at least, which is crazy to even fathom. But Iowa's making a push, but I just think they're a little too far behind the eight ball. And then we talked about Michigan State. I've seen some other bracketology formulas put Michigan State as about a nine seed. And for the Spartans, they go to Purdue, as we mentioned, and then they host Northwestern next week, and then they finish the year at Indiana. I mean, the Spartans have got to find a way to...
That's not an easy ending.
Yeah, Michigan State's got to find a way to get maybe one or two of those to start feeling a little bit better, because they're sitting at 9-8 in the Big, 9-8 in the Big Ten, 17-11 overall, and coming off those losses to Iowa and Ohio State. I mean, the Spartans are going to have to find a way to get one or two to feel pretty good.
Do you see any chance that are they pretty solid in there that they could go 1-2? And still be pretty good solidly in the big or in the NCAA?
I think everything is on a spectrum. And if you go 1-2, you're sweating a lot less than if you go 0-3. I think if you go 0-3, you're really worried, depending what happens in the Big Ten tournament, but you're really starting to wonder what your fate is. If you go 1-2, you feel you probably should be in, I think, is where it kind of starts to feel. 0-3, you really start to get nervous. Anything above one, if you go 2-1 or you sweep, you're fine. Everything's good.
Well, they'll have 10 wins in the Big Ten if they win one of those three.
Yes.
Which I don't know of any teams that have gone with 10 wins in the Big Ten and not made it to the tournament.
That's a good question.
If there has been, it's not many.
Iowa's going to maybe be that this year. They're 9-9 in the Big Ten. If they get one more win, I don't think they're going to get in. Minnesota could get up to 10. Although you're right, especially in this year where the Big Ten isn't holding nearly as much value, I think that's right. The big thing, because normally the Big Ten gets about 9 teams into the dance, mm-hmm. 8 or 9 teams. So if you're finishing 500 or better in the Big Ten, you're getting the respect, where this year the Big Ten's just not seen the same way.
It's an interesting what it's going to turn out to be when it comes to Selection Sunday, because this is one of the most lackluster. Even last year, when we were expecting not much from the Big Ten, we got more. This year, we had expectations of two dynamic teams and then kind of some 4 or 5 supporting teams that could be pretty. Yeah. We don't have that. We have one really good team and two supporting teams, basically.
Yeah.
Right now.
No, it's true.
It's a year of it's. I can remember seasons of, you know, just a few four teams making it from the Big Ten. That was when there was only 10 in the conference. Okay. Yeah. We should most of our conference shouldn't be not making it to the NCAA.
You know? And we felt that this was going to be a down year.
Correct. It's just shocking that it has come to fruition to this point.
Real quick too. Yeah. I don't believe we've talked about this on this show. But this will allow me to segue over to Big Ten women's basketball here momentarily as well. But on the men's side, it looks like Zach Edey's going to win Player of the Year back-to-back years, which will and maybe he wins National Player of the Year. I mean, I think that's probably going to happen as well, and that's going to put him in a pretty elite class.
One of five, I believe, right?
I think so. I know it's a pretty rare group, a pretty small number. But Edey, this is it for him. He decided not to come back to Purdue next year. This is the final go-round with him as a Boilermaker.
I can say I'm not surprised. I knew he had an extra year, but he went through senior day last year and decided, you know what, I'm going to come back and run it back one more time. He could conceivably be probably one of few people to go through 3 senior days if he really wanted to. but I think I think this should be the end of the road. Like he's gotten a full, you know, term at Purdue. Yep. And it's time for him to, you know, keep, you know, move along and get, you know, allow more to start playing at Purdue. I love that he has developed. The fact that he has only played 6 years of organized ball or 7 years of organized ball and he's this good should scare the living daylights out of people as he gets more and more athletic, as athletic as a 7'4" dude can get, because he may develop a really good jumper, you know, and be a real dynamic big guy at the next level. It could happen. I'm not saying it will, but goodness gracious, for only 7 years, for him to probably be the National Player of the Year back-to-back years is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is.
He's not just tall, kids.
he's had a great career, and it's going to be fun to see the end of it here this year. But
for you, right? Yes.
Well, and that segues us over to the women's side. Where yesterday, Caitlin Clark announced that this is it. She's going to have senior day this Sunday against Ohio State, and Caitlin Clark will not come back to the Big Ten next year, which all but cements the idea that she's going to be playing with the Indiana Fever in the WNBA draft. Hard to imagine any other reality than the Fever selecting her with the number one pick. But Caitlin Clark, this is it.
Some trade package, maybe, that entices the one pick. Now,
you gotta
this
trade
is
a whole city. Like, what?
Yeah, yeah. Indianapolis gets LA. Like, that's no, but yeah, honestly, it worked out well for Iowa fans. We talked about this last week that it was kind of brought up that, you know, of course you want to see your player stay at the school that you love,
yeah,
but when there's a chance to move on, you don't know where the first pick's going to end up next year.
Yeah.
She could end up in Seattle. She could end up in LA. She could end up in New York City. This year, she's probably ending up in 99.8% chance. She's ending up in Indianapolis. That's an afternoon drive to get to go watch Caitlin Clark play at the professional level.
Which, that'll be pretty great.
Plus, and Indianapolis going to have a new new arena to display these great players that they've got on their teams. Now they're gonna get better, you know.
And I don't know if we can do justice in words to what Caitlin Clark has done for women's basketball, what her career has been, and the level she's played at this season. I mean, it's just simply one of the greatest careers we've ever seen in basketball history. She's getting ready to pass Pistol Pete for the most points in D1 basketball, man or woman, ever. It's something I never thought that record would break. And for Caitlin to be doing it without the COVID year, too, like doing it in 4 years, it's just kind of hard to fathom. I thought Pistol Pete's NCAA scoring record would sit there with the Joe DiMaggio hit streak and some of the other records in sports that just would never be touched because it was so lunacy. Like, it just, it was so comical how many, like, it's 3,600 points, 3,500 some points.
Yeah.
It's insane. And Caitlin's going to pass that, and she's cemented herself as one of the greatest to ever play this game. And it's been a treat.
The one thing that Caitlin Clark didn't do that Pistol Pete did is Pete did it in 3 years rather than four. But
and Pete did it without a 3-point line.
And
too.
Without a 3-point line, he averaged 44.2 points a game. That's without a 3-point line. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what Pistol Pete did was just, it's cartoonish.
That's
like,
not at all taking away what Caitlin Clark is doing. It's
correct.
Just take it into consideration the amazing feat that what Pistol Pete did. But, oh my goodness, yes, Caitlin Clark has opened up a lot of people's eyes as to the women's basketball game and how good and dynamic it can be. That's not saying nobody else has done it, but like, she's done it on such a level. And it's been very, it hasn't been done quietly. Like, she's very outgoing. She's very boisterous about it. She gets her fist pumping. She gets, you know, gets that attitude that many people don't like. I liken it to what Javi Baez did in 2016. People hated him when he wasn't playing for your team. I loved him as a Cub. And once he got traded to the Mets, I'm like, yeah, I don't like him that much. I still love him.
I see what you guys meant.
I still love him, but I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it. Daniel Murphy, kind of the same thing. He played back a few years back. He played on the Mets, and I hated him. He got traded to the Cubs. I'm like, I really like this guy. It's because he aggravates the daylights out of you as an opponent, you know? And that's what Caitlin Clark does, but she is a fantastic athlete and ball player. Amazing. Yeah.
No, it really is. And all of that being said, in this wonderful career that Caitlin Clark has had, they didn't win the Big Ten this year. It's already wrapped up. Ohio State wins the Big Ten outright. The Buckeyes go 16-1 in the Big Ten season. Of course, they meet Iowa to end the regular season. And folks, I don't know if you have plans already for Sunday at 1 o'clock, but if you don't, now you do, because number 2 Ohio State goes to number 6 Iowa. It's a top 6 game in the country. And I saw tickets. I think this was from Tick Pick. They're going for, outside of general admission, just about $450, somewhere in there.
Wow.
It's insane. And playing the game that you do, where you go to ESPN.com and you look at the tickets as low as, it's funny because you see a $2 for a game, $14 for a game, $15 for a game, $338 for a game of Ohio State and Iowa. But it's incredible. And that's going to be, even though Iowa can't win the Big Ten title or even a share, that's going to be must-see TV. And a big part of it too, Sam, remember last year, Indiana, this is kind of deja vu. Indiana had it wrapped up, went to Iowa to wrap up the regular season. And even though Iowa couldn't win a share of the Big Ten title, Caitlin Clark hit that iconic game winner from the wing and gave us an unbelievable moment. And I think Sunday, not that Iowa and Clark dazzles quite in that fashion again, but Sunday is going to be a memory maker as well. It's going to be a great game.
Now, I know, they're going to, Ohio State's going to try to win that game, but are they going to be upset if they don't? Because like you said, they've got the conference already tied up. Yep. They're the one seed in the tournament next week. Is this kind of, okay, we're going to try, but we're not, we're not going to throw, new things at them. We're just going to keep playing our game. And if we lose by 15, we lose by 15.
I don't know how upset you could be. Maybe they want to. There's a little bit of spoiling Caitlin Clark's senior
night. Right. Let's not let her win on senior night. Let's not give her a W on senior night.
Maybe there's an aspect of that. But no, overall, I hear you. I think Ohio State's a one seed in the NCAA tournament. They're already the one seed in the Big Ten tournament. Ohio State doesn't really have anything to prove. They've already beaten Iowa. They beat them in Columbus in that overtime game where Cody McMahon, you remember, had 30
yes.
points, I believe. And Clark ran into the Buckeye fan during the court storm, as maybe some people who'd forgotten about the game, that might bring them back to it. But that's going to be a huge, huge game. 1 o'clock, number 2, Ohio State, number 6, Iowa.
Can I say something here? You can go to all the other games in the Big Ten. So Minnesota at Penn State, Northwestern at Rutgers, Michigan State at Wisconsin, Maryland at IU, Nebraska at Illinois, and Purdue at Michigan for $85 and still have like $200+ left over for the money you'd save going to Iowa and maybe, you know, take the family out for a weekend or whatever.
It's insane. The market and economy around Caitlin Clark is just
oh, for sure.
It's ridiculous.
And she's gonna make a good amount of money, and she's gonna bring a lot of money to the WNBA franchise that she plays for. You know,
yeah.
be it Indiana or wherever she ends up. So, yeah.
If we take a look at the weekend ahead for Big Ten women's basketball,
yeah,
there's no games today. No games tomorrow. The end of the regular season, everybody's going to play on Sunday to finish out the regular season. So we mentioned number 2, Ohio State. They're the one seed in the Big Ten tournament. They're the champs. Number 6, Iowa. Right now they're tied for second place with Indiana. So that game means something. And Indiana's game, as they host Maryland at 3 o'clock, will mean something in deciding who ends up being the 2 or the 3. Both of them are in some fashion going to be 2 and 3. They can't fall any worse than that. Because at 4, it's Nebraska and Michigan State. They're both tied at 11 and 6. Ooh. Nebraska owns the tiebreaker over Michigan State. They played for the first Big Ten game of the year at the Breslin Center back in December.
Yeah.
Nebraska beat Michigan State. And how important that game ends up being all these months later is kind of amazing. But so Nebraska's at Illinois at 3 o'clock. Illinois is starting to find their footing a little bit. A week ago, they beat Indiana by 20, but Michigan State just beat them by 17. And honestly, with about 5 minutes to go in that game, Michigan State was up on Illinois by 30 at the Breslin Center on senior night last night. So Illinois is kind of hard to figure out maybe exactly where they are. Michigan State also deserves a lot of credit because they are playing unbelievable ball at 11 and 6. They're tied there. Michigan State will be going to Wisconsin. So if Michigan State wins, Nebraska loses, Michigan State will get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament. If Nebraska wins, period, that doesn't. Nebraska gets the double bye in the Big Ten tournament. Michigan State gets the 5 seed. But that's how that shakes out. And in 6 through, I think, 10 or 11, it starts to get really congested. And we'll highlight those other games real quick. You have Minnesota going to Penn State. Penn State's right there in that mix. That's a 1 o'clock tip. Northwestern heads to Rutgers. That's a game for last place right now in the Big Ten Conference. Northwestern's 3-14 in the Big Ten. Rutgers 2-15. That's a 2 o'clock tip.
Can I say real quick how cyclical basketball can be? Because, excuse me, Northwestern being the dregs of the Big Ten, I'm used to seeing in the men's side and the women actually being a good program. And now we've flipped the script. And now this, for the past few years, it's been the other way around.
It's pretty funny how sports just kind of
Oh, well, I guess he decided he was done for the day. I don't know. Oh, there he is.
Oh, must have
he just up and left. What the heck?
I was still sitting here. I was just talking to myself. Apparently, my phone decided to back out for a minute. So, okay. Yeah,
well, that's all right. You're back.
Maryland's at Indiana, as we talked about, at 3 o'clock. Nebraska, we mentioned, goes to Illinois. And finally, Purdue goes to Michigan. That's a 7 o'clock tip Sunday night. So that's the Big Ten women's basketball slate heading down the end of the regular season. And as we said, there's still a lot to be decided for the Big Ten. Even though the champ is decided, there's still a lot to be shaken out. And if we can take a moment, because I know we're starting to run a little bit lower on time here, Sam. But
sure.
I do want to, on the women's side, talk about how wonderful of a year this was, because last year we mentioned that the Big Ten had maybe its best year ever on the women's basketball side, and all the teams that got into the tournament having just a wonderful year again, where the parity is so evident, and it's made such a great product. And now you're looking at for the Big Ten Conference. Look, Ohio State, Iowa, Indiana, they're in the NCAA tournament. Nebraska, Michigan State, I feel 99.9% confidence in saying they're in the NCAA tournament. I mean, what Nebraska, Michigan State have done all this year. But then you look, you have Michigan, Penn State, and Maryland all hanging around that bubble right now on the women's side. And a couple of them are, it depends what site you go to in the bracketology. Some
have you we know nothing.
Uh-huh. But like their fates are really kind of up for grabs. They need wins. Penn State, again, hosting Minnesota this weekend. Maryland goes to Indiana, which is a great opportunity for them. But
sure,
that's going to be a tough one to win. And then Michigan hosts Purdue. Those three teams, they've got a little bit of work to do to feel really comfortable as they hang around that bubble. And then we'll have to see next week in the Big Ten tournament, because the women's tournament is next week. The men will be the week after. But some of those teams might have a little bit of work to do. We'll see how many Big Ten teams get into the field. But you feel pretty confident saying that five are in for sure. And it could climb as high as, I believe, eight. But it's going to be a little bit tough.
Well, and it makes you wonder, like, you know, it that cyclical part of it, it's normally the Big Ten, both men and women, they provide a good amount of teams. And then both this year, both sides are struggling to get, you know, we're not going to have a full Big Ten out of both sides. Like, we're not going to have 14 teams going to the big dance, probably, anyways. Total. Which just to me is mind-boggling. And shoot, you even add the four teams that we're going to add next year. We probably still wouldn't have – I mean, it's just a weird season for both sides. But I agree that you've got those top five for the Big Ten. You got to think maybe, you know, Maryland gets that win. You've got to think they're in, right? If they beat IU –
they're close. So right now their overall record is 17-11. They're 9-8 in the Big Ten. That would be another one of those big signature wins. It might just catapult them, because I believe last I saw they were on the last four in line.
Okay. Like, so they're close anyways.
They're right there. This might be enough to boost them up and over that hump, but
it would be their marquee win, because they're 0-7 against all ranked teams that they've played this year. So that would be their win to hang their hat on, so to speak.
And then you got Michigan at 17-12 on the year, 8-9 in Big Ten play. Their win, though, was the only loss for Ohio State season in the Big Ten. So Michigan's got one of those marquee wins in pocket. Penn State just has been on a nosedive ever since Tate Valaday got hurt and we got into the month of February. They got a lot of pieces. They were able to hold off Purdue at Mackey Arena earlier this week, but Penn State's got a little bit of work to do.
And for Purdue, that's a rough team to struggle against, because they're right now they're 5-12 in the Big Ten, 12-16 overall. So they've had a very down season. So for somebody like Penn State who's hoping to burst, not have their bubble burst, for them to struggle against somebody like Purdue, that's not the most opportune time to do that.
And that's just been Penn State the last couple of weeks. But I do want to mention for Purdue too, just in case we have listeners that aren't religiously watching. Purdue is, I mean, you mentioned their record. They're so young.
Yes.
Give Katie Gerald's time there at Purdue. She's entering her third season. She's got a couple of great freshmen that I think are going to get
is
some
she
awards.
Entering or is she getting ready to finish
She's
her, third?
In her third season? Apologies. Yeah. I don't know what happened there. It's lack of sleep. But yeah, she's got a couple of really talented freshmen. I'm a big believer in what Katie Gerald's is doing there at Purdue.
And if you remember her as a player, she was one hell of a player at Purdue. Uh-huh. So, and like, she knows basketball.
I remember her from the Crossroads League days, where she was coaching Marion in the NAIA and winning national championships. So, give her just a little bit of time, because I really am a believer in what she's building there. And if I can dismount on this, look, I mean, we talked about Coach of the Year on the men's side. If we can talk about it on the women's side, and I will be upfront. I may be biased. I see.
Well, let me tackle it then to start out.
Go ahead.
I totally think it's it's Freilich at Michigan State because of the, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and it's still, it's not changed. She is superseding and going over the expectations of what Michigan State was expected to have. Now, yeah, they're 11-6. They've lost some games that they shouldn't have in the Big Ten, but they also weren't supposed to be fifth. In the Big Ten.
They weren't supposed to be fifth or even maybe a fourth where they get the double bye.
Right.
Here, Sam, let's start with the fact that this is a Michigan State squad that brings in Robin Freilich for her first year. They lose their top two leading scorers from last year, Matilda Eck and Kamari McDaniel.
They transferred out.
K-Max is just out of eligibility, but
Virginia Tech.
So you enter this season, and the preseason expectations already have you around 9th, 10th in the Big Ten Conference. You don't have a ton of depth. You don't have a lot of height. And 2 weeks into the season, you lose your starting center and you lose your leading rebounder. Isa Alexander and Gabby Elliott are done for the season. And then a couple weeks after that, your 6'5" freshman center is done for the year. Mary Meng as well. So you lose three players to season-ending injuries. You have a 7-player rotation left, and they're all guards. So you're starting a guard at the center spot in the Big Ten Conference, night in, night out, going against.
Did they even bother jumping
in the Big Ten? Michigan State's actually won most of the tip-offs this year. I could get to that a little bit later.
Wow.
But yeah, so with five guards, and Julia Awald is the one who's been starting at that five spot. Julia Awald's averaging 15 points a game, more than 7 rebounds a game. She's the second leading shot blocker in the Big Ten Conference now. It's unbelievable what they've done with five guards and two guards off the bench to be able to get up to fifth and maybe even fourth in the Big Ten Conference, losing three players to season-ending injuries. And here's the kicker too, Sam, is we talk about it being a 7-player rotation. One of those 7 players came with Robin from Bowling Green, transferred in Jocelyn Tate. The other 6 players are returners from last year's squad. Those 6 players last year averaged a combined 31 points.
Yeah.
This year they averaged 74 points, those same 6 players.
And part of that's just improving to be better player. But at the same time, if you don't have that coach and that staff driving you to get better, that doesn't happen overnight either.
And coach, you know, putting them in the right spots. I mean, we talk about Aerol playing the 5. She averaged just over 3 points a game last year. She's averaging 15 points now.
Can you imagine what potentially could be going on if Robin had a full roster of her big people too?
Yep. I mean, it really is kind of crazy, but I think people might just look and see, 11-6, that's better than what they were supposed to be. But unless you understand the full context of the season-ending injuries, the fact that it's just a bunch of guards going out there and just bawling night after night. And the players deserve a ton of credit, too. Me saying this isn't supposed to take away any of the credit the players should get, but you should understand the context to really appreciate the job Robin Freilich has done in what has been a tumultuous year one that's turned out to be tremendous. I mean, this could have been disaster given all the injuries and everything here in year one. And Robin Freilich and this staff did an unbelievable job to make it a record-setting year in Michigan State women's basketball, where there's never been a year they've hit more threes than they have this year. They're going to break the points per game average this year. I mean, it's unreal what Robin Freilich and his staff have done. So Robin Freilich, I think, should be coach of the year. I do think also Ohio State's Kevin McGuff is deserving as well. But I would lean Robin Freilich because of all the context that I just laid out there.
Now, and this is why I would say the same, because, you know, laying out all those injuries, you could see 6-11 being an acceptable record with all those injuries.
That was projected to be their record before the season started and the injuries happened.
Before the injuries happened.
Yeah.
So it would be an acceptable shoot. You, with all those injuries and a 6-11 record, you might be like, she's doing a pretty good job. With all that she's been dealt, 6-11, that's not bad. She's 11-6 in her first year in the Big Ten. Come on, to give her a full roster, maybe they're pushing IU.
Yeah.
Don't know.
I mean, they might get the double bye in the Big Ten tournament. They might finish top 4 in the league. And given the context we gave you, it's unbelievable. The players have been amazing. Yep. Robin's been amazing. It's an all-around effort. But I think, and like I said, I believe Robin Freilich should be coach of the year. for Big
now,
Ten women's basketball.
If they vote Kevin McGuff the winner, I wouldn't say necessarily that I would disagree
that anybody was robbed or anything. Like right. he's deserving too.
Sure.
He really is.
It just is unfortunate for Frelick that he's having such the season that it may take away from her, you know, her accomplishments as well, because yeah. Ohio State's standing out like they are.
Well, like we talked about on the men's side, if Matt Painter wins the Big Ten title, I don't think he really cares about Coach of the Year. I think Robin's pretty happy with the idea of just how well her team's playing this year.
For sure.
What I think it's deserved icing on the cake, and see if it plays out that way.
I was going to say, it's a difference between a muffin and a cupcake. One has frosting, one doesn't. She either has a really good muffin or she has a cupcake, you know?
And
that's what a muffin is
either.
A bald cupcake. That's all it is.
All right. With that being said, Sam, you want to let everybody know where they can find us on the way out the door?
Yes, sir. You can find us on the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as Twitter at B1G underscore talk at B1G. Dalton, not at B-I-G. It's B1G underscore talk, big talk. Yep. Always remember, just one finger. That's the what goes in there. Facebook, it's B-I-G talk, big talk. Do not, well, you can, but if you're looking for us, click on big talk, not all big talk. Those are fine people at all big talk, but it's not these two guys. So we are streamed every week on the ASAP network, every Friday, as close to 9 a.m. as possible, and up till about 10, as you know, you're hearing this right around 10 o'clock. But then we release later the day on Lounge Media Group. And if you want to watch the video stream but you missed it, go to Spotify, where our video stream is also available. Dalton.
Well, it's been awesome to hang out here on this Friday morning with you all. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for another episode of Big Talk. College sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. Everybody have a great Big Ten basketball and hockey weekend, by the way. Championship coming up in Madison, Wisconsin tonight and tomorrow. Michigan State and Wisconsin playing for the Big Ten title. Their teams 1-2. Didn't fit that in earlier. No better time than on the way out the door to let you all know.
Nothing there. Big Ten hockey is fun to watch.
It
and
is.
Shocker, Notre Dame's part of the Big Ten in hockey.
But Michigan State's got a 2-point lead on Wisconsin. They play 9 o'clock tonight, 9 o'clock tomorrow. The Big Ten title is going to be decided on the ice tonight, tomorrow, Madison, Wisconsin. So make sure you tune in.
When was the last time Michigan State won themselves a hockey Big Ten?
Last time they won a hockey championship for the conference was 2001, but that wasn't the Big Ten because the Big Ten formed later on. They've never won a Big Ten title. History could be made if Michigan State wins it in regulation tonight. They would be the Big Ten champs. If they don't win it in regulation, it all comes down to tomorrow. So make sure you tune in on the ice, too, because it's some pretty exciting stuff at the finish of the season. But
high-stakes hockey is fun to watch. Doesn't matter what level, if it's high-stakes hockey, it's fun to watch.
So don't just enjoy Big Ten basketball this weekend, but have yourself a happy Big Ten hockey weekend as well.
Yeah, why not?
For my partner, Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. So long, everybody.
See ya.